happy Monday and welcome to this week's edition of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast. I'm Robert Dutt, editor of ChannelBuzz.ca, and as always, your host for the show. Today we have a unique show for you as we're joined on the show by Paulo Del Nobleto, channel chief at Jalera, and for 2 decades my co-worker and later peer in the Canadian channel media space. There's a unique parallel between Del Nobleto and Jalera as well as their working together. As Jalera has reinvented itself over the last few years, from managed service provider to a hybrid aggregate services provider serving the channel audience, so too has Del Nobleto reinvented himself, ascending from covering channel chiefs to being one himself. We'll chat about Jalera's journey in the channel, as well as Del Nobleto's own journey. We'll touch on who the company partners with, and how it can help solution providers expand their offerings without having to expand their bench, particularly in key spaces like security. And we'll talk about what Del Nobleto has learned from being on the other side of the channel, as it were. It's a great interview, so let's get right into it. My chat with Paulo Del Nobleto. Paulo, thanks so much for taking the time.
Great to be here with you, Bobby.
Dear listener, if you notice a little bit of a different timbre or tone to this particular edition of the podcast, let me put the cards out front. As we'll get into for much of Paulo's career before joining Jalera, he was in the channel press and in fact was my first managing editor when I started. We worked together for about 5 years and have been peers, competitors, and good friends ever since, and travel buddies, I would add to that.
So exactly.
There's a bit of a different feel to this. Hope you enjoy it. But so you're about is it 8 months or so in at Jalera now?
Yeah, 8 months.
All right. I think most partners have probably heard about Jalera, but can you kind of give me the elevator pitch? Tell me a little bit about what you guys are up to.
Sure. Well, you know, speaking of the Channel Press, which, you know, we were members of for a long time, you know, you ever had other reporters ask executives, you know, do you have any competition, right? And the executive would always say, oh, no, we don't have any competition, right? And we would always snicker in the back. And, you know, You and I probably stopped asking that question decades ago, right? Because, you know, everybody has competition. And of course, you know, Jalera is no different. But, you know, I truly believe we are pretty unique in the marketplace. And we sort of defined ourselves under this HAS model. And I'll go into that in a second. But essentially what Jalera is a white labeled managed services provider, and that's obviously not new. But we go to market. Our go to market's pretty special because we like to integrate ourselves with the entire channel ecosystem, whether that be channel partners, distributors, vendors, you name it. And how we go about doing this. So we're around just a little bit over 200 people in our organization, but we run very flat. So, for example, I report directly to our CEO, Alex Chan. Underneath me, there's a group of solution architects, and these are very, very talented individuals that collaborate with solution providers directly and customers to develop full solutions. And channel partners don't have to pay 1 cent for them. They work directly for you, essentially. So underneath that, we have roughly almost 170 fully certified techs that can do basically everything under the sun. So you can, if you partner with Jalera, you can consider them to be part of your team. So in essence, you know, when you work with Jalera, we can expand your solutions portfolio, we can augment your solutions portfolio, and we can definitely deepen your bench. And given with, you know, all the shortfalls in terms of staffing across Canada, that's a really important factor to note. So we did coin the term HASP, which stands for Hybrid Aggregated Service Provider. I wrote the story back in 2016 about the shift that Jalera did, because they essentially were a managed service provider, and then they pivoted away from that. So we look to work with the vendor community to develop new as-a-service solutions. We do put our own IP and our own stamp on things, and, like, you know, in terms of go-to-market and processes, to make it as simple as possible. Everything we do is as-a-service. So they all come with fixed monthly costs for, you know, anything under the sun in terms of security and storage, for example. Those are two main things. But you also have a help desk. But, you know, it includes things like escalation management, a full ticketing system for tracking issues. We have a network operations center that's located in Canada in a secure facility. We have a security operations center, basically the same thing, in a secure facility in Canada. Actually, we just became SOC 2 certified. Mm-hmm. So these SOCs, these NOCs, they're yours, right? Along with our secured portfolio, our stored portfolio, our supported portfolio. You get live agent monitoring, providing multiple layers of automated protection, automated report generation, and it's all centrally managed 24/7. So that's really us in a nutshell.
All right. So what are some of the sort of typical or most common workloads or tasks or services that partners come to you to take over or manage on their behalves?
So our main one is Securit, which is an enterprise grade security for IT infrastructure. You know, basically, you know, we have a firewall. It provides strong protection against all major threats. However, it can't analyze these events and proactively stop malicious attacks from happening. This is where, you know, Securit comes in. It's more than just a solution. It comes with a team of security experts that can quickly identify potential security threats using intelligent tools and immediately respond through the right course of action, through our SOC, through our NOC. And one of the key differentiators that we have is called the SIEM, which stands for Security Information and Event Management. We partnered with McAfee to develop this. So this, Bobby, as you probably are aware, because you always go to the McAfee show, is that it's a, you know, at least a $2 million solution, right? And you need to hire four highly qualified techs to run it 24/7, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, who can really afford that? Who can really, like, even spend the time to develop something like that?
Who can find the people for it in the security realm?
Exactly, find the people. So we have this, and we run it as a service. Right. But all of our Securit products, whether it's firewall or endpoint or our two latest ones, which is Wi-Fi as a service and Securit Mail, all the logs are run through our SIEM, right? So, for example, if you log into your Office 365 in Vancouver at 9 a.m. in the morning, and then, you know, suddenly, you know, 2 hours later, you log in Newfoundland, well, our SIEM will figure out that that's impossible and block it, alert it. And then our team, and we have, you know, roughly around 15 people 24/7 in our SOC to sort of remediate all that. So those are some of the things that are our core, right?
Is this all being delivered white label as far as the customer is concerned? Or basically, what does the customer see when working with a partner that's working with Jalera?
So the partner has the opportunity to brand it any way they like.
Okay.
So they can go to market with, you know, Securit. Say it's like, you know, one of our partners is SoftChoice, right? Mm-hmm. SoftChoice can go and say, yeah, this is Securit. Or they can brand it, you know, SoftChoice Security Service, whatever they like, right? Mm-hmm. And so the customer, they're dealing with SoftChoice or partner ABC. And we like to roll this way, Bobby, because, you know, as you know, the solution providers become the trusted advisor to the customers, right? Mm-hmm. So they know that customer better than we can. All we want to do is be the channel partner's back-end service provider. So like I said earlier, right, if you're lacking some resources, we can provide that. We're nationwide. Mm-hmm. We're also in the United States. We have our European office in Porto in Portugal. So remotely, we can take care of practically any geography. So the solution provider is still the customer-facing entity.
All right. So what does the customer and partner balance look like right now, sort of Canada, U.S., rest of the world, that sort of split out?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I'm here. I'm here to sort of build out the channel ecosystem, and it's an interesting question because what really defines a channel partner? And I know you and I have been tackling this question for 5 or 6 years now, especially with all these born in the cloud partners that are coming up. And so we have our traditional ones that were on my top 100 list for years. We have born in the cloud partners, but we also have like an insurance company, right, who wants to provide cyber insurance, but they'll give you a better rate because you have our secured portfolio or a stored portfolio, for example, right? So we work with a company like that. We work with a company called Henry Schein, which is a dental distributor. Huh. Why would we work with that? Well, they have customers that have dental records. Dental records need to be stored somewhere. They need to be retrieved at a moment's notice, and they need to be secured. So part of, when you work with Henry Schein and you need a dental chair and scanning software, well, part of the package is secure it and store it, so it's all part of the package. So, and that's one of the more interesting aspects about this job is that you're dealing with more than what your traditional base is, what we always thought was a traditional channel partner.
Yeah, and that's something that I think more channel chiefs in more places are facing than ever before, as technology gets its hooks into everything, and everything gets its hooks into technology. Depends on which.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Given that answer, this might be a little bit hard to respond to. But what is sort of the average rank and file Jalera partner look like, or perhaps put better, what makes a good fit for a partner for you guys?
So we have all the top end partners like CDW, SoftChoice, and we also have like a retailer like Grand & Toy and Office Depot. But what we're looking for, what I think we can really help, is that mid-tier partner, that small partner who, is the be-all and end-all to the customer, right? That's who we're really looking for to grow our base. Like, I know all of the players out there, right, just like you do. And, when I got this job, there's a lot of, publicity out there saying, oh, is Paulo going to be calling on me to partner? And of course, I'm interested in talking with anybody. But what I found is that, a lot of partners are coming to us because they're looking to, get a seam inside, right? Something that they cannot do on their own, right? Or, they want to start managing access points, right, with our Wi-Fi as a service, because their customers are asking for that and they don't, and no one else is doing it, right? So that's basically what my mix is right now. But, it's still early stages, and we need to sign up a lot more because we have a coverage model that is quite challenging for Canada. And also into the US. So I'm open for business, Bobby, that's for sure.
Looking for new partners who are looking to go in some new directions. Sounds good.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me the way that this seems to happen in the MSP space, that so many of the businesses that today are the titans supporting MSPs come from MSPs themselves. You can probably list off a handful of the big names in the game that started out as solution providers themselves, and I'd start with, of course, ConnectWise, which was Avar back in the day, and now obviously so much more than that. How does that sort of VAR MSP culture that Jalera came up with impact how you partner today?
It's funny you mentioned ConnectWise because, I thought about ConnectWise when I joined Jalera, because I think it's a it's a pretty similar journey, even though we're doing different things. Yeah, and different places, we're actually a partner of ConnectWise, so they do our entire ticketing system. You know, that's a good question. I really don't know off the top of my head. I think it's just the evolving nature of the technology business. You know, I started seeing it a little bit when IoT came out, right? You know, you have construction companies becoming IT providers, you know, with HVAC systems and having it all connected. And I know that Cisco talked about that, you know, for 7-8 years now, right? And, you know, you look at where all the new data is coming from. It's coming from machines, right? I think IDC has a stat in 2020 or 2021, correct me if I'm wrong, 99% of all new data is going to be coming from machines. So how does that evolve in terms of, like, if you're an MSP? I mean, I don't know. Like, that's definitely crystal ball material. and I know you and I, we tried to banter about, like, how this industry was going to be going in a lot of our articles. And I'm just not sure, especially now that I'm on the ground and behind the curtain and I'm learning all these things about how partners and distributors and vendors act, you know, it's quite interesting. So I don't know if I have if I answered your question or not, but I think it's still to be determined.
Yeah. Okay. I can respect that. You touch obviously on your own journey to be here at Gilera, and that's an area of no shortage of fascination. Certainly for me personally, and I think for a lot of folks in the industry who know you as I used to put it, PDN from CDN. because that just worked out so nicely. You know, given that I've always kind of thought that the corollary to the old saying that those who do and those who can't teach is those who can't teach write about it.
Right.
How does one go from you know, covering the industry to being part of the industry and building a channel organization?
Well, you know, I've always been a channel advocate, right? Sure. And it's kind of tough because, you know, when you go to journalism school, you have to sort of remove your bias. But, you know, I mean, I was openly rooting for every channel partner under the sun, right, to be successful because, as you know, they're our readers, right? So they're essentially our customers, right? Because if they're not reading our stuff, you know, we don't become relevant, right, anymore, right? So I've always advocated for their success. And I think this is one of the things that intrigued me about this particular opportunity is that, you know, I don't have to sort of put my allegiance to one specific vendor. Right. I can, you know, pretty much stay neutral and help every channel partner because, like I said earlier, we're white label. We have a deep bench and we have all these solutions that are as a service and we, you know, just pick and choose which ones you want you know, we can make it work, right? So I'm still like in that same role where I'm helping out channel partners instead of like publicizing what they're doing, all the great things that they're doing. I'm sort of like helping them with like I said, the deep bench and the and all of our solutions. Over the years, when I interviewed channel chiefs, right, and we would get into the weeds of you know, building channel ecosystems, we would always like bounce ideas off of each other because one of the things that, you know, you have and I have is that we've seen every single channel program known to mankind, right? Yeah. And I know that, you know, when Dell was entering the channel and developing Partner Direct, their channel chief, you know, reached out to me to, you know, give my 2 cents about the channel program before it was released out to channel partners, right? So we have this great insight, right? And so from there, right, you know, there was a lot of channel chiefs that said, hey, you know, you ever want to like come work for us and everything like that? And I was always, so from that point of view, I was always intrigued. Okay, could I actually, you know, do this job, right? Even though I just write about it, like I'm the theorist, really. But you know, I was never really interested because I thought I had a great job. A lot of people thought I had the best job in the industry, which I always corrected them, and I always said, you know, Rick Reed has the best job in the industry. And I hope Rick is listening. Hi, hope you're enjoying your retirement. But yeah, so that's always intrigued me in the back of my mind. I always say, you know, what do I do as an encore? And when this opportunity came, I thought it was the right fit at the right time. I still get to do journalism. Part of the things that I do, part of my duties is writing for the National Post. Jalair is based out of the Post Media Building. Right. That also lended to making a real cool opportunity. But you know, 90% of my job is channel development, so it's and it's just another challenge, right? A lot of my peers, you know, have said to me, you know, if you're not challenged, then you're going to become stale. If you become stale, you become irrelevant, and then what are you going to make of yourself, right? So. It's just like the right timing, and I'm having fun doing it. And but still, it's an enormous challenge. And you know, you and I, we've said this many a time that you know, a channel chief's job is a thankless task because he or she has to have a mandate from their employer and from the thousands of channel partners out there that they serve, right? So, it's a thankless task. So I'm learning that firsthand.
No doubt. And that's what I wanted to ask next was, you know, what have been the major lessons and surprises of seeing life as a channel chief from the other side of the fence, as it were?
Okay, so I'm really glad you asked this question because I thought you would. The absolute biggest surprise is how valuable and how important money is. Mm. And I know that's going to sound stupid because obviously money is very, very important, right? But if you remember how many articles we've written about that cost is not a factor, right? You know, there's tons of articles I can cite. Where, you know, we listed that cost was like the fourth most important thing. And, you know, philosophically, I still believe that. But, but you know, when you're like in the weeds and trying to help a solution provider win a deal, cost is a big, big factor in it, right? And if you're not cost competitive, you are going to lose, right? And I had a 3-hour like back and forth with Matt Dukowski of Synnex on trying to win this deal for a great partner that we both know, Todd Crystal, Spencom in Montreal, right? And you know, dealing with Todd for you know close to 15 years, I really wanted him to win, right? but the pricing was just not in sync, right? And so we went back and I gave him every single theory that I know to mankind, right? Yeah. Every single go-to-market theory that I thought would win, right? But in the end of the day, right, if we didn't have our costs aligned, we would have lost. And so, that's why I think, you know, fixed cost solutions are a great, great opportunity for customers out there because they're going to know what their costs are every month, right? So there's going to be no surprises. And that's why I think this consumption model is definitely going to win out at the end of the day.
All right. You said earlier, and I certainly agree with you, you know, the channel chief is often a thankless job. And one of the other things I think we say or think about it is it's not often... a path that leads directly to the top of the organization. That said, now that you're in a channel chief role, you know, not to get all, what have you done for me lately with you, but how closely are you keeping an eye on the Chuck model, the Chuck Robbins model of ascension from channel chief to CEO?
I think about Chuck every once in a while, because I think he's a great guy, and he's always made tremendous amounts of time for both of us, right? Both when he ran U.S. channels, which also had a dot line into Canada, and now he's the CEO. And in terms of his journey, I have not thought about it at all, because it's not anything that I aspire to be. I don't want to. At this moment in time, I don't want to be a CEO. I have my hands full trying to develop a channel ecosystem for Jolera. But I do keep abreast of, you know, everything that goes on in the industry, including the big deal with CDW and Scalar, which I think is going to, spiderweb and there's going to be a big ripple effect, and I know you know that as well. And I think that's what's really important about this particular role, and any sort of channel chief role, is because you are industry facing, so you're sort of a leader in this community, in this channel community, right? And I definitely push for that. With the Channel Chiefs Council, because I believe every organization should have a dedicated channel chief and not just, a VP of alliances and things like that. I think in that essence, right, you are sort of running your own ship. But no, I don't aspire I like to follow in Chuck's success, for sure. I like to be successful like what he did, but in terms of following his path, not today.
All right, well, there goes my one blatant attempt to get the clickbait headline for this podcast.
That Don Nepleto eyeing Cisco channel Cisco CEO role. Move over, Chuck Robbins.
you just gotta throw one over the plate every now and then and see what happens. But let's bring it back to the realm of seriousness for a quick second. Just to wrap up, wanted to get your thoughts on what partners can expect from yourself and from Jolera over the course of 2019.
A complete and utter commitment to all channel partners. It's no different than when I was the editor of Computer Dealer News. I lived the job. I thought about channel partners all the time, every single time. It's amazing. And I don't think you, because this job is so difficult, because, and you dealt with Michael Kerr, right? The longtime channel chief of EMC, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought he said it best when he said that, anybody can sell, right?
Yeah.
But having someone else sell your stuff for you, that's really difficult,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's in essence what a channel chief is trying to accomplish, because you have to make it worthwhile for the channel partner, or else why partner, right? Sure. I think that's what I would say to that question. You have my utmost commitment, 24/7, that I'm going to be in your corner. And like I said earlier, right, I've been a channel advocate since we started working together all those years ago. I'm not going to mention the year, by the way. that's how I would answer that question.
All right, brilliant. Paul, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us.
No worries. All the best, Bobby.
So there you have it. Jolera and the channel is seen through the eyes of Paolo Del Nobleto. I'd like to thank Paolo for joining us for this edition of the show, and thank you for listening. We couldn't do this without you. The podcast will be back on Thursday as the New Year's podcast series keeps rolling right along. This week, we're joined by Ingram Micro Canada Chief Bill Brandel. I recently shot a quick video with Bill to discuss highlights of 2018 and plans for 2019, and after we finished recording that, we kept the mics on for a bit to go more in depth on where things are at for Ingram Micro in Canada and where he sees them going. So if you haven't done so already, please check out my video interview with Brandel on the site and join us on Thursday for the podcast. But until then, I'm Robert Dutt for ChannelBuzz.ca, and I'll see you around the channel.